27. The atmosphere at the compound had changed. Caro could feel the edginess as soon as James greeted them.
Welcome back, Doctor. And this is Kayla?
Kayla said nothing. She ignored the hand James held out to her, as she had ignored everything else on the trip to Cayman Brac. Caro barely recognized her lovable niece in this silent, sullen child. Kayla had questioned nothing. Not why her mother was left behind at a hospital, nor Caro's assurances that her mother would be joining them soon. Caro felt helpless. Kayla's withdrawal was not like Ellen's, not a complete shutdown of the will to function. It felt as if Kayla blamed Caro for something and thought that Caro should already know what. But Caro didn't know. Kayla wouldn't tell her, and the little girl's misery tore at Caro's heart. Maybe the nanny or the therapist, both hired remotely by Julian from his inexhaustible supply of island contacts, could reach Kayla. The nanny, a middle-aged, motherly-looking islander, apparently knew not to touch the child.
I'm Jasmine, she said. I'm going to be taking you to school and helping with whatever you need. There's a lot of fun things on this island, Kayla, for when you feel like doing them. Can you swim?
No.
You want to learn?
No.
Caro said, no thank you, Kayla, and wondered if it was right to correct her.
No thank you, Kayla said in the same sullen voice,
and Caro looked helplessly at Jasmine.
We'll be fine,
Jasmine said to Caro, and Caro nodded, hoping it was true. Caro's new bedroom, located next to Kayla's and Jasmine's rooms, looked exactly like her old one, except for doors connecting all three. The doors were so new that they smelled of sawdust. In Caro's room, Molly waited. She hugged Caro and then held her at arm's length to examine her.
You look terrible, and you have every right to look terrible.
All at once, and for the first time in 5 days, Caro wanted to cry. She didn't.
You don't look too great yourself.
Nobody does. We're all on our last nerve here.
Well, maybe the second or third last. But I'm so glad you're back. And you don't have to explain about your sister or niece. Everybody always knows everything in this place.
I don't want to talk about it, Molly. Not yet.
I'll spread the word. Just hole up here and spend time with Kayla.
I need to check on Ivan in the hospital.
Oh, Trevor released him already. Nobody heals from surgery as fast as a 22-year-old who's already convinced he's immortal.
Are you coming to his multiverse session today?
Yes.
The faster she got back into the routine here, the better she would feel, and so the better her chances of helping Kayla. As long as no one expected her to spend time alone with Julian or Watkins.
Great. Molly said. 4 o'clock.
Ivan Kyven was perhaps the only cheerful person in the compound. His head had healed beautifully, although the tiny titanium case holding the connectors on top of his shaven head made him look like an alien in some B-movie. But, Caro realized, Ivan was already alien to her. He reminded Caro of the boys in high school who hunched over their tablets playing video games everywhere they could, at lunch, on the school bus, in any class with unvigilant teachers. Nerds. Caro had been a nerd too, but not that kind. Science wonks and digital geeks had an overlap, but she hadn't been in it. She'd stayed after school to do extra frog dissections. Ivan's tribe sat on the picnic benches outside, arguing about battle passes and abandonware.
You comfortable, Ivan?
Aiden asked as he hooked Ivan to the session machinery in Wing 3. Caro hadn't even realized that Aiden was back from Grand Cayman. He looked thinner, but otherwise recovered from his bout with rosemary pea. Watkins sat in a chair at the side of the room. Caro refused to look at him.
I'm good,
Ivan said. He squiggled his scrawny frame on the bed until he found an optimal position and then asked a long string of software questions, of which Caro understood none. Aiden answered each, also incomprehensibly.
Ivan finally said.
Cool.
A moment later, his face went into the eerie session blankness, and the computer screens brightened. Barbara, stationed at the other imaging screen, suddenly snorted. Aiden shook his head. Carol thought, what the hell? The image of Ivan stood up from the bed, walked out the door, and entered a landscape that was... what? Some sort of structure superimposed on the Wing 2 courtyard. A series of undulating wooden scaffolds, ringing the compound walls and rising higher and higher, even as Carol watched. Small, brightly colored blobs with spindly legs appeared, peering down from higher levels, scampering from tree to tree on those levels that, all at once, sprouted trees in huge pots. The blobs were some sort of robots. The image of Ivan climbed nimbly up a ladder to the first level of scaffolding and aimed a gadget at a pink amoeba. The gadget gave off a burst of light, and the pink blob turned green. Ivan went on, jumping and shooting and laughing for another half minute before the screen went blank. The Ivan on the cot blinked, and Aiden erupted. What the fuck was that? What did you do, you moron? Ivan blinked again.
It's a game I'm inventing for kids. Why did you cut me off? If I get 7 greenies, I get a reward. You had the chance to create an alternate reality, and you turned the compound into a video game? Why not? This game will earn me a fortune someday. And anyway, it's my reality to create.
And it will continue on now without you. Those blobby robots are real. It's a real universe.
I know, Ivan said, somewhere between defiant and abashed.
The goobods will be okay. They're happy little robots.
The blobby creatures had looked happy. All at once, Carol wanted to laugh. It came out a strangled, bleh. A video game hallucination, tailor-made to whatever went on in the head of this intelligent, emotionally stunted man-child. Ivan could have lucid hallucinated anything, and he'd chosen a video game full of goobods. Aiden was not laughing.
You're lucky Julian isn't here. When he finds out how you wasted an opportunity for real information about the multiverse...
I got real information, Barbara said, and Carol would have sworn that she too was suppressing laughter. Interesting cerebral mapping data. It's all right, Aiden.
Carol stole a look at Watkins. He'd fallen asleep in his chair, morphing from a manipulator of Carol's life to a frail, sick old man.
Well, Ivan said, sulky now. You should have let me finish my game, Aiden. I was winning.
Kayla remained silent and withdrawn. Nothing interested her. Carol suggested a card or board or video game, exercising together in the gym, a jeep ride to the ocean, a movie on her laptop. Kayla shook her head, mute.
Kayla, do you want to talk about your mother or Angie? Sometimes when we're sad, it helps to talk about it.
Another shake of the head before Kayla turned away. Jasmine said privately to Caro,
that child needs to see her mama.
I know, Caro said. I'm working on it.
Good. Because until her mama comes here, or Kayla goes to her, Kayla is just going to keep on acting out.
Has she mentioned Angelica to you?
No, Jasmine said, not once.
Carol phoned Julian, yet again. He said he was still working on the documentation to transfer Ellen to the hospital on Grand Cayman, and that there was no change in Ellen's condition. Is she eating? Carol asked.
No. But she didn't fight having an IV with nutrients. I got this, Carol.
She washed her face and brushed her teeth, caught sight of herself in the mirror, and scowled. When she'd been 11 or 12, someone had remarked how much Carol resembled your beautiful mother. Carol's immediate response, no, I don't, had not been true, so Carol tried to make it true. She bought a box of Clairol with her allowance and dyed her light brown hair a ghastly flat black. She'd cut ragged bangs.
she smeared on cherry red lipstick, the shade farthest from her mother's tasteful rose. She'd vowed to gain weight, to cover up the delicate bones that Lauren Soames Watkins maintained by fanatic dieting and 3 times a week soul cycling. And none of it, in addition to causing a huge fight, had helped. Caro had still looked like a clownish version of her mother. Ellen looked like their father, big and athletic. Over the years, Ellen had somehow managed to forge a relationship with him, which Caro hadn't realized was so important to her, and which Caro had destroyed at Ethan's funeral. Because, of course, Ellen had sided with Caro. Ellen, never academic, had been a community college freshman when their father committed suicide. Almost immediately, she'd gotten pregnant by Eric the drug dealer and dropped out of school to marry him. And then, 4 years later, during one of Eric's brief paroles, became pregnant with Angelica. Would any of that have happened if Caro hadn't lost control at Ethan's funeral? Might the fragile, miserable household have held together? Another timeline, another branch of another universe. For just a second, Caro fervently wished she could believe wholeheartedly in Weigert's theory, in Julian's software, in the possibility of what life does not furnish, a do-over of moments one profoundly regrets.
"Are you busy the entire rest of the day?" Trevor asked her. They had just finished the pre-op imaging, interview, and blood work for Weigert's surgery, scheduled for the next morning.
"Most of it," Caro said.
"Mapping data with Barbara, check-ins with Julian about Ellen, attempts to reach Kayla, or at least to show she cared by sitting nearby as Jasmine supervised the child's schoolwork."
"Why?"
"If you have, say, 45 minutes, we could take a short drive to the cliffs on the east side of the island. They're spectacular."
"How is it that you've been on Cayman Brac for, 5 minutes, and you've seen these cliffs, while I've been here so much longer and have not?" He smiled.
"I'm a tourist at heart. I walk around European capitals in a Hawaiian shirt with a fanny pack around my waist and a camera around my neck.
And sandals with black socks?
You know it."
She looked deliberately at his Converse high tops. Trevor laughed.
"Come for a drive later today, Caro. I promise to keep away from any maiden plum trees."
She agreed, her mood already lifted by his playfulness, by the promise of a brief absence from the compound, by his wanting to be with her. Maybe she could return from the cliffs with a fresh plan to reach Kayla, or at least a different perspective on why Kayla was shutting her out so painfully. After he signed out a Jeep, he said,
"I lured you out on false pretenses. My license expired while I was overseas. You'll have to drive."
"I can do that. You navigate."
"If you knew how terrible my sense of direction is, you wouldn't ask that. Fortunately, it's a small island. Head north."
Eventually, he directed her off the main road and down an unpaved side road bordered mostly by thick scrub. When they could go no further, Caro parked, and they walked toward the sound of the sea, with gulls wheeling overhead and the occasional bright flash of a parrot. The cliffs were indeed spectacular, falling in irregular shelves and boulders of limestone 120 feet to ocean rocks below. The tide was in, and waves surged restlessly against the cliff. Under gray clouds, the water was a dark turquoise, flecked with white.
"People climb these cliffs," Trevor said, "and rappel down."
"Do you rappel?"
"No, far too much of a coward."
"Right," she said. "A coward who joins Doctors Without Borders." "This is lovely, Trevor. Thanks for bringing me here. Even though I'm afraid of touching any plants or..." He interrupted her.
"What the hell was that?"
A huge lizard disappeared into the brush. Caro smiled. "A Sister Islands rock iguana. They're protected." She remembered that Ben Clarby had told her that during her first hour on Cayman Brac. It seemed a lifetime ago. "Aren't they ugly?"
"Yes. That thing..." "Uh-oh.
It's starting to rain.
Only a few drops, but Caro had already learned how quickly storms blew up in the Caribbean. They ran for the jeep, and Trevor said,
"Don't go back to the main road. Take the first right. It leads to Spot Bay."
They beat the rain, but just barely. Following Trevor's directions, she parked by a bar in the village wedged between the Parrot Preserve and the sea. Together they wrestled and fastened the rain tarp over the jeep, darting inside the bar just as the sky opened and rain fell in heavy sheets. The bar decor featured parrots, stuffed, sculpted, and photographed, plus a live bird in a huge cage. The tropical feel was slightly diluted by a large TV over the bar displaying a soccer match between Montreal and Orlando. Caro ordered Chardonnay. Trevor asked for Lagavulin.
"Ah," he said after the first sip, "you can't get this smoky scotch anywhere in the Congo."
"Will you tell me more about Africa?"
"Yes,
but not now, Caro. I have to ask you something.
Several somethings, but the first is this.
Can I do anything to help your niece?" Trevor was the only one to defy Molly's stricture that Caro did not want to talk about her family. Caro said stiffly, "No, thank you." He gave her a long look, but said only, "Okay.
But if you change your mind, just say so. I'm good with kids."
She nodded, believing it. His combination of playfulness and empathy would appeal to children. Away from the compound and its multiple complications, Caro was very aware of how much it also appealed to her.
"Second question," he said. "This one is also none of my business, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are you in love with Julian?"
She nearly spilled her wine.
"With Julian?"
"Yes. I've picked up a lot of emotion between you two, and
if you're involved with him, I'd like to know that."
"I'm not in love with Julian. I've never been in love with Julian."
"Then what?"
"We have a complicated, if brief, history. Half him giving me genuine help with Ellen, and half him manipulating me, again through Ellen, to stay and do exactly what he and Watkins want. Julian is more complicated than he seems, but there was never anything romantic between us."
"Not quite true, but close enough."
"Good. I just thought I better find out." She took the risk.
"Why?"
"Because I'm attracted to you. You must know that, a perceptive woman like you." She hesitated, then said,
"I haven't always been perceptive about men."
His gaze softened.
"See? That's what I like about you.
One thing I like."
Caro was confused.
"What is?"
"Your honesty. You tell the truth, even to your own detriment. For one thing, and I've listened to you carefully on this, you refuse to say that you believe George's theory, although pretending to would have made things smoother for you here."
"I believe part of it, just not the hallucination delusion."
The words had just slipped out.
He smiled.
"Interesting term. But see, you just proved my point. I like your honesty. I like your uncompromising intelligence. I like your fierce loyalty to Ellen. Yes, I know the whole story. Do you think anything is private in that compound? And I've always liked spiky women."
"Am I spiky?
Like a yucca. Do you know what I'd like to do, Caro? Have a normal conversation so we can get to know each other better."
She said, "And what do you imagine would constitute normal in this situation?" His brown eyes, such alive eyes, sparkled.
"All right. Not normal. How about this? Put in George's terms, we need to generate a universe in which we converse in ways that other people in this universe would consider normal."
"Okay," she said, playing along. "What is your favorite pie?"
"My favorite pie?"
"Yes."
"Cherry."
"Mine's lemon."
"Of course it is.
sweet and tart.
What music do you...
No, he said, reaching across the table for her hand. I want to know you in ways that actually count. Tell me where you grew up, what kind of childhood you had, why you became a doctor, why neurosurgery. Tell me everything. She was not going to do that. Her natural wariness kicked in as soon as he said it. But she could tell him a little about her childhood closeness with Ellen, the games they'd played, her decision to go to med school, which intern rotations she'd liked and which not. Nothing about Ethan, her father's suicide, her previous superficial relationships, Paul Becker. Although she was fully aware that much of that information could be found online if he'd wanted to look. The facts, anyway, but not how those facts had affected her. Trevor was far more forthcoming. He told entertaining stories about growing up working class in Boston, but also about his college years, his sister and brother, the woman he'd once been engaged to before she broke it off. Caro shook her head at that. She couldn't imagine any woman who'd accepted Trevor, later changing her mind. He was attracted to her. Like all pretty women, Caro always knew when a man desired her. But not once during the hour they talked did Caro feel he was trying to maneuver her toward sex, or toward anything else. So why not show her attraction to him, too? Why not go to bed together? An uncomfortable question, although Caro already knew the answer. Her casual affairs had been just that, casual. Trevor Abruzzo did not do casual. He would want more, would want her to let him into her life in a way that might be temporary, but not shallow. She couldn't risk that. She had too much going on in her life and too much heartbreak already. If that made her a coward, then, well, okay, she was a self-preserving coward. They were just finishing their second drinks when Caro's cell rang. The sound startled the live parrot, who in turn startled Caro by squawking, "Oh my fucking goodness!" "It's all set," Julian said. "I'm flying to Grand Cayman tomorrow with Ellen and a nurse. But first you have to sign, scan, and email back the additional papers I just sent you."
God, it's like buying a new house. Sign, initial, and don't miss even one place.
Get whoever's on duty in the tech office to do the printing and scanning, or James in his office. Can you get them back to me in half an hour?
I'm not at the compound.
Where are you?
Spot Bay.
Why are you... Never mind. Just get back and do this as fast as you can, okay?
Of course. But I want to see Ellen as soon as she arrives, tomorrow.
I don't think the facility will allow a visitor on the very first day, but I'll ask. And you're still implanting George in the morning, right?
Yes. Let me know when I can see Ellen. And thank you.
The two words came out more intently than she intended. Everything now was so fraught with emotion.
Caro said to Trevor, "We have to get back. I need to deal with papers for Ellen."
"We should leave anyway,"
Trevor said, signaling for the check. "Will you have dinner with me Saturday night?
Assuming there are no more crises at the compound?"
"Yes." The word came out without her willing it. Trevor paid the bill.
"Okay, one more time. Based on your intensity during that phone call and my insecurities, are you sure about Julian? He's charming, smart, and about a dozen times sexier than I am."
It took a real effort for Caro to remember that she had once thought Julian charming and sexy. What she did realize, for the first time, was that Trevor, like her, had insecurities. Unlike hers, his centered on his appearance. She looked straight at him, at his stocky body and nondescript features and receding hairline, at his warm, intelligent, kind brown eyes. She said, in the most meaningful tone she could manage, "No, he's not." To her surprise, Trevor actually blushed. She drove back one-handed, the other held in his. But for Caro, the spell had been broken, and only half her mind was on Trevor.
Julian's phone call had yanked her back to reality. This reality. Ellen was being transferred to Grand Cayman. Caro had checked out the hospital online. It was as upscale as Julian had said, with a strong reputation. Surely, they would be able to help Ellen. And Caro could visit her sister there, and, when Ellen was well enough, bring Kayla to see her mother. It would be all right. Caro, with George's and Julian's help, would make it all right. Ellen would not end up like their father. Weigert's surgery went smoothly, despite his age. Caro thought she'd never seen anyone happier to have his skull cut open. When Molly, poised to administer anesthesia, told him to count backwards from 100, he smiled at her and said,
"By ones, primes, squares, Fibonacci sequence, or..."
Caro never did find out which he chose. He was out. His brain presented no hidden anomalies. His vitals during the operation never wavered from the expected. Caro, relieved, did the closing instead of leaving it to Trevor, who didn't question her decision. During surgery, Trevor was all detached professionalism. But of course, their drive yesterday had not gone unnoticed. Molly had begun her inquiry with, "Aha!" And, despite Barbara's tactful attempts at restraint, asked so many questions that Barbara finally lost all tact.
"Oh, for heaven's sake, Molly, can't you see that Caro doesn't want to talk about Trevor? Leave her alone."
"There's nothing to talk about," Caro said. "We went for a drive to see the cliffs." She was determined to say no more. After all, she barely knew Trevor Abruzzo. Only, it didn't feel that way.